Good evening, this is Gary Kavanagh here on the right side, my friend and colleague, Michael Dwyer. It is Sunday, the 18th of January. It is the best kind of Sunday. It is an election Sunday.
Yeah, joy, oh joy.
So today we have two stories we want to talk about with you. The first of them is a story I actually just published on Gripped there 2 days ago about a People Before Profit candidate in Galway who got recorded saying a couple of things a candidate probably shouldn't say, and then admitted he had said those things but said there were mitigating circumstances. And the second thing, of course, is the an analysis of the news out of the British palace about Henry and Meghan Merkel.
Oh yeah, we really care about that.
No, I don't give a shit about that. We'll actually be talking about the election. Another classic bait and switch.
The opening salvos.
Yeah, you may have noticed that like my total hesitation as I tried to say that sentence is I realised I barely know these people's names and I damn well know nothing about it. Anyway, we're going to be talking about how the election has been going for Fine Gael, primarily because, let's be honest, it's mostly been, let's say Fine Gael have dominated the news cycle since the election was called.
I hesitate to call it car crash politics, because my genuine concern at this stage is there may well have been even a car crash in the middle of all of this. What can go wrong has gone wrong.
It's been pretty spectacular. The poll from the Times is coming out actually as we are recording this, so pretty much we will give you the live reaction to it. But on to the story of the People for Profit candidate in Galway. This story involves a guy called Joe Loughnane, who is, he's the head of the Galway Anti-Racism Network. You may have seen him on TV or being quoted in the Irish Times, the Independent, or on radio around the time of Noel Grealish made his comments, or around the time there were those protests against direct provision centres, or proposed direct provision centres in rural areas. Joe is the head of Galway Anti-Racism Network, was brought up as an expert in a lot of those.
By the way, Galway Anti-Racism, is that basically something which Joe Loughnane invented in order to have something to be the head of so he could go on telly and be quotable? Or is this a long established civic organisation? Whatever it is, I don't believe it's a particularly massive mass movement.
Well, I mean, it's got Galway in the name, so one would assume it is limited to Galway in its scope. I wouldn't have thought Galway would have a terribly large amount of racial animosity, but whatever about that. I am not sure of Garan, actually. I believe Joe is one of the founders, but I'm not actually terribly sure about that. But anyway, Joe, there was a recording of Joe came out a couple of months ago, or of what we thought was Joe, but we were pretty sure it was him, but we weren't sure if the audio had been edited or messed with in some way, so we never reported on it. However, Joe, during the week, or possibly the end of last week, put up a statement on his blog where he accepted that the recording was real. Now, he then said that he had said those things because he had been in a fight with people, and he was extremely vulnerable, to use his words. He was drunk. Near blackout drunk, in fact, using his words again.
Wow.
And that he wanted to get these people to think he was dangerous and so back off him. What we took from that is that Loughnane had come out and said, yeah, that recording is real. And then we read through his statement and we listened to the recording, and there were a couple of things that just didn't line up. So, for instance, he says that he is pinned to a chair by far-right racists, and that they are trying to choke him out when he's talking. And, you know, he's saying this to make himself look like the big man, so they'll back off.
Did he ever explain how he got himself in a position where he was pinned to a chair by these far-right fanatics? Who are these people? Had he been kidnapped?
Well, he had gone to a series of parties. Now, Loughnane says in his statement that he was near blackout drunk.
Right.
And he has limited recollection of this night, and he is basically put it back together with the help of a number of his friends.
Oh, okay.
They went, after these parties, they went to a squat, an anarchist antifa squat.
The kind of place you'd find hard right fanatics.
Yeah. And basically got into a fight with someone. And then he says, you know, he was being choked. He was scared. He wanted to get these guys off him. The problem is, if you listen to the recording, I've done a fair bit of like audio engineering, and rooms and different areas have different acoustics to them. And you can kind of tell where someone is based on the background sound. I'm sure listeners to the show have noticed that occasionally we record in rooms that are slightly too large for recording and don't have enough soft furnishings, and it sounds like garbage. But you can tell it's been recorded in that. So Lugnane doesn't sound like he's inside on that recording. He sounds like he's outside. He sounds like he's in a garden or in an alleyway. In fact, you can hear traffic going by in the background of it. And he doesn't sound physically distressed whatsoever. You can tell when someone is speaking with a constricted airflow.
Yes.
So from our perspective, Lugnane had admitted he had said the things in that article, but then his explanation of why he had said those things doesn't seem to fit with the physical evidence that we have. In fact, what you can hear on the recording is Joe Lugnane complaining that other people are judging him for using cocaine at great length.
Now, isn't my understanding, and I'm just a happy observer here, you have been the truffle pig unearthing these rich, juicy jewels of news. But isn't there a part of the tape where he goes on at quite some length in the manner of a monologue? I mean, it's not something that sounds like where he's this guy being pressed down and being forced. He sounds like someone expiating quite freely.
No, I there is no point on that tape, and the what has been heard is a small snippet of a recording which is about 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
There's no point in that recording where Joe Lugnane sounds like he is in physical distress, but there are points where he basically goes into a full-on, don't you know who I am, sort of thing. Like, he says, I've been helping people who had no help. Who are you to judge me? But then he makes the point that he says, I have sorted a lot of people out with a lot of drugs in this city. And that became the grip story. People for Profit candidate says, I have sorted people out with drugs. And then the question became, well, what does sort out mean in this context? Is this Joe saying he has sold drugs? Or is this Joe saying that he has not sold drugs, he has merely facilitated the widespread sale of drugs?
He was, in some sense, he supplied them, perhaps, but didn't do so for profit.
Yeah, which, you know, is a possibility, but not...
I must say, as it's phrased, it makes it sound like a statement of, like, civic... he's doing a civic service. You know, I sorted out a lot of people. I'll tell you what, the implication is almost like, I'll tell you, if it hadn't been for me, there would have been people all over this city with nothing to buzz on.
And so that became a gripped story, the headline of which, I would like to make this point, the headlines are chosen by the editorial team and not by the writer, so I didn't write this, was People Before Profit Candidate on Tape, I Sell Drugs. And to be fair, in the article, I wrote quite a lot, actually more than I probably should have, about his denials, his very specific denials of why this had happened.
Mm-hmm.
I then did, in many cases, point out on the record, like, for instance, Lugnane says that he had never been to the house that the recording takes part in before. That may or may not be true. But what you can hear in the recording is Joe Lugnane saying that he fought for these people to get that house. So he was certainly familiar with the house,
mm-hmm.
if he had not been inside it. But he sounds very friendly to the people he's talking to.
Right.
So they appear to be friends of his. He says he worked to get them that house. So, you know, we of course mentioned after his denial that, well, in the recording, you can hear this. And then we put, I think, a 60-second snippet of the recording at the bottom. So people could, you don't have to trust us, listen to it yourself. But I said, I was not going to do anything on this because I couldn't be sure it wasn't edited. Until Joe, for reasons I, to be honest, cannot really comprehend, I don't know what he intended to do here, publicly admitted that the recordings were legitimate, but then alleged that there were circumstances that mitigated that, but did so in a way that is contrary to what you can hear on the actual recording.
Right.
So he then went on to, after I published the article, he decided he wanted to have a bit of a go at me on Twitter for 2 or 3 hours. And I, of course, engaged because I'm a, you know, I'm a happy kind of man on Twitter.
Does that strike you, though? Speaking just objectively, if you happened to be the director of communications for People Before Profit and you're giving them a piece of advice on this, does having a 3-hour spat on Twitter about this strike you as the most sensible way to approach?
I mean, if he had come to me and said, should I put up a blog post in which I publicly admit that the recordings of me selling that I have facilitated either the supply or sale of cocaine and other drugs to a massive amount of quantities are true, I would have probably stopped him there.
But that's, okay, there are lots of fun things happening here, but first, my first question from the beginning of this is, why did he do that? I mean, the thing had been out in the ether for a while.
Yeah, other journalists definitely had it.
Because there was a perception, at least, that an individual or some individuals involved in providing this war, maybe the credibility wasn't nailed on, and also because there wasn't a degree of certainty about the integrity of the tape itself or the recording itself, it wasn't going anywhere. I mean, that's my point. It wasn't going anywhere. It hadn't gone anywhere at that stage. So why come out and recognize it exists and say, yes, that is me?
Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, this is quite a serious allegation. So we, up to the point he admitted it, because we had only at that point had heard a snippet of the conversation, we didn't feel comfortable that we could go, well, it hasn't been edited or, you know, hasn't been cut together in such a way that he didn't actually say those things and it just makes him sound bad. But for him to come out and say, actually, yeah, that did happen. Well, now you're a general election candidate who has accepted that you said those things. He got very angry at me that I didn't pay more attention to the reasons he had said those things in the behemoth of a statement he put up on that blog. And my basic stance was, Joe, you admitted to doing this. You admitted that this is true. You've then alleged that other people did things. We have no recording of that. We have no corroboration. And it seems to be to run counter to what we can hear on the tapes. But you have admitted the part we wrote about.
Now, it starts off with a snippet being in the ether. But I understand at this stage there's more than a snippet.
Yeah, there is a much longer recording of it. Now, I'm not sure who has that recording. I'm not sure
what happened with it. But it's out there somewhere.
It's out there. It can be found. And it will certainly be found. An interesting thing about Joe's statement is he names particular people.
Right.
And says that they have done particular things to him. And when he started having a go at me on Twitter, he started saying, like, this guy, and he'd give the full name, will sort you out with underage children. This guy will keep your nose full of cocaine while you're doing them. I was like, Joe, you're threatening to sue me for defamation while you, a public figure, call a man by his full name, and we know his location because he's very clearly in Galway, a pedophile and a supplier of underage children for prostitution.
There is just about no more toxic an accusation you can make in our society than that. And it seems to me absolutely bizarre that somebody who is in the line of being a professional politician would do that on Twitter and think that that was a sensible or reasonable thing to do.
General election candidates generally do not threaten to sue journalists, particularly when that journalist can go, as I did, Joey, I literally have a recording of you saying it, which for most people, you stop there. But I mean, and then he was saying things like, I hope, you know, I'm looking forward to this spiraling out of control. I'm looking forward to what comes, maybe not spiral out of control, but looking forward to seeing this situation spiral. I've got your address. I'm looking forward to what comes next. And I just spent 3 hours going, what are you looking forward to, Joe? Please give me as much detail as you can here. What are you going to do with my address?
I know, what he's saying is, I know where you live. I mean, and we can all speculate that it could mean many different things.
Oh, he might want to send me a lovely legal letter.
Yeah. Most people, in the context of a robust exchange, if somebody turned around to another person and said, I know where you live, most people would take that to carry one kind of meaning rather than any other. And again, it doesn't show. Last week, we were all about the nuance. If you remember, we're talking about the RIC. The RIC. It seems to me that this is a case, again, where a little bit more nuance would not have gone amiss.
To be fair, I am very happy if someone is going to, like, he threatened to sue me and I just said, look, my DMs are open. Get your solicitors to reach out. I'll send you a contact address. I don't find the idea of a solicitor's letter terribly threatening, particularly when I have a fairly good idea it's never going to happen. And if it does, I would look forward to Joe Lognane's people standing up in front of a judge and going, well, no, you see, they said he sold drugs and he merely facilitated the widespread distribution of drugs. Well, at least according to this very clear 15-minute recording of him that we have. And that's a totally different affair. They've defamed him. Because I don't think that will fly terribly far.
He gave them away for free.
Yeah.
Subventing it out of his large personal fortune.
Yes, because it was a civic duty. Well, he does make that point during his clip. That do they not understand the things he's done for people? He's been helping people who have no one to help him, which, I mean, if he is sorting people out with drugs for free, God knows what that means.
Well, yeah, it's a great town, Galway. It's a buzzing town. But keeps it buzzing.
I think there is an important lesson here. If you are a general election candidate, don't admit that a recording of you saying that you sort a lot of people out with a lot of drugs is a legitimate recording. Even to explain it, because at the end of the day, you've only admitted your actions and just accused others of actions.
Yeah, okay.
And if that happens, don't then go on Twitter to, by name, accuse people who you know and are probably looking for reasons to sue you of being pedophiles.
Yeah.
Because they'll probably sue you.
There's a pretty good chance, would have thought.
I mean, I wouldn't be terribly surprised, Michael. But look, by the end of it, like, I'm fairly happy to kind of, I don't find him threatening, so I'm fairly happy to just mess around with him on Twitter. But by the end of it, there was a little bit of, like, Joe, this isn't helping you. You should get off Twitter. Like, this is not, you're not doing yourself any favours. Like, I started to feel bad for him, which is not what you want when you're trying to either threaten someone or hang legal action over them as a sort of, I've got you now.
No, it's not. It's not the reaction you're trying to stimulate in people.
No,
anyway.
Pity is generally not what you want.
No, God love him.
There was like a little bit of like you need to kind of sit down, lad, here, because this is, you are making this a potentially serious matter for yourself. Now he subsequently went back, he blocked me, and he deleted every tweet. But he was there was one fantastic one where he attacked someone who had basically said, you know, I don't think this is a good idea for you to do, Joe. And he called her a mutant. And it turned out she was in a wheelchair.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
And she just kind of went, well, yeah, I mean, I'm seriously ill. What are you saying about my genetics? And you were just looking at it and you were like, stop. Stop.
When I was a chap and fashion was a little bit more, little bit odder than it has been for the last 20 years. A phrase which may still be used today would be when you'd meet one of your mates and who'd have just gone a little bit over the top, or you'd meet somebody and you'd look at and say, Jesus, do you have no friends? As you have nobody that would say to you, stop, don't come out of the house looking like that. It's a bit like that here. You're listening to all this. This is going, or you're reading this on Twitter, and there must have been a sense where you're thinking, does he not have a friend that will come in and take him by the hand, close the laptop, and say, now come on, Joe, come on now, we'll go and get a cup of tea, and we'll have a sit down and a cup of tea and a ginger nut, and we'll just leave this for a little while.
Like that was sort of like there was this sort of, I get your reaction, but it wasn't, he didn't have the sort of, like, this is a problem for me. He was like, you're going to bring up my profile. I'm going to look great here. You know, it was a sort of any publicity is good publicity. He was saying I had a GoFundMe to fund my election campaign. And, you know, it's gone up this amount since you published your story. And I was like, I'm legitimately quite happy for you. I have no personal animosity to you, but you may want to change approach.
Or modulate. I mean, there is an element to this which sounds almost, dare I say, grandiose.
So are you surprised that a man who is on tape saying that he, complaining about others judging his cocaine usage, comes across as grandiose and out of touch, and incapable of perhaps ascertaining the gravity of the situation he appears to have found himself in and threatening to destroy everyone who gets in his way?
Generating the perception of, you know, not great impulse control, perhaps. But then that's something we all experience, I suppose, at the old Twitter.
I mean, I would like to point out at this point that Joe Lognan denies he is a drug dealer. He says he doesn't use drugs, that he had some childhood experimentation, but stopped then, and has actually, he denies he knows any drug dealers.
Right.
Because drug dealers never go to, like, an anarchist squat.
God, no. Why would you go
there? It's actually quite weird, because he says he doesn't know any drug dealers, but in the video where he's complaining about people judging his cocaine usage, he makes the point that the people he is complaining to are constantly off their head on LSD and ecstasy, which presumably at some point would facilitate or require the facilitation of a drug dealer.
Well, no. To be fair, both LSD and MDMA are chemical synthetics, and somebody maybe with a good grasp of, I don't know, would it be organic chemistry, could synthesize them in their garden, their back garden, their garage or something.
I mean, if he had said like DMT, I think that would be a lot more likely. I think most people just buy, let's say, MDMA from dealers who supply from Amsterdam. It's been a while since I've looked into the MDMA market, so I assume it still comes from Amsterdam. I'm actually not, don't know.
Well, I don't, again, I know nothing about any of these things, but my memory of reading an article maybe in The Economist a few years ago is that not so much, and it's that there's not as much MDMA in the available confections that people are taking these days, where once upon a time it would have been pure MDMA. Now it's a much diluted substance.
There was only one thing about that entire day that didn't kind of go out quite well. He didn't ring me. That was the only thing I was disappointed about. Because I record my phone calls.
Yes.
Particularly when I've just released a story like that, because you get a call from, like, Joe's number, an unknown number. You like to have a recording in case it's relevant. So it's not, I don't record standard phone calls, but ones like that. And he didn't, and he does have my phone number, so, you know, feel free.
Well, you never know. It may come up.
But anyway.
Just before we leave it, I mean, just to broaden it, do you think this will have even the slightest effect on the vote of People Before Profit?
People Before Profit are currently polling at quite a low. Well, I actually haven't seen the new poll, so they could be doing better. I have reached out to People for Profit multiple times on this issue. I've asked them, are they aware of these statements by Joe? I've also asked them, are they aware that in, I believe, 2013, Joe was brought before the courts on two counts of assault against members of the Gardaí? And I've asked them, were they aware of that when they chose Joe as their candidate? Uh-huh. People for Profit have not responded to me. And several people have sent me messages saying that they have reached out to People for Profit on social media about this. People for Profit have blocked their accounts. So I have a feeling People for Profit,
moment in a, which I don't know if it was connected to this, maybe it was not connected to this at all, but an odd moment where there was a discussion at a press conference about like the moral responsibility of people who use recreational drugs.
Oh yes, that Ruth Coppinger gave. Yeah.
And the connectivity between that and the kind of violence that we have been exposed to in recent days of those people who are involved in that business. And I just wondered if there was some kind of intra-party connectivity there.
No, I mean, it's, you know, you can never tell if there's a connection between certain things, and, you know, causation is not correlation. So, for instance,
indeed.
Grip's site went down due to a DDoS attack on the day the story was meant to go live. We nearly had to push the story back an entire day.
Right.
And at that point, the only people who were aware of the story were that the story was coming were people for profit who had reached out to for comment and the Gripped editorial team. But if you start going, you start going into conspiracy theory area at that, and there's absolutely no indication there's any link between those things.
No, indeed, no. It would seem unlikely.
But I don't think the rest of the media will pick up this story. Joe, as the head of an anti-racism network, is very much the right kind of person to get this. He accuses anyone who does anything against him of racism. He's the head of an anti-racism
network. I understand your skepticism.
But I would imagine most of them have this recording.
But it's just such a lovely story.
It is pretty nice.
You know, I mean, if you're a journalist and you have the tapes and you have the comments and you have the Twitter arguments, God, I mean, it would be hard not to do something with this. It's just rattling good fun.
And you mean you might get to have the experience of Joe calling you a combination of sweet cheeks and a mutant? Which, let me tell you, Michael, is I've never felt that alive.
Yeah, that's a lovely image.
I was actually, the entire time I was sitting on the couch watching TV. The election. We were talking about I know ourselves, when we were talking about what we thought would happen, we said Fianna Fáil would go up, Fine Gael would go down, and that would be the way it was. And then we were talking about all the pundits, or at least the pundits who seem to know what they're talking about, the actual people who, by this point, I kind of think know what they're talking about, were all saying that as well. And I was then saying I had gone to look at a constituency level analysis, and I was saying, actually, Fine Gael did really bad the last time, and when you look at the actual constituency analysis, it's really hard to actually see how Fianna Fáil can get some of the numbers that people are saying. However, mm-hmm. The Sunday Times poll has just come out, Michael, and I don't know if you... Have you seen this?
No, I've been refreshing like hell, but it hasn't come up to me yet. No.
Fine Gael are on 20%.
Whoa!
They've fallen 7 points. Fianna Fáil are on 32.
Nelly. Oh, Nelly! Well, now we don't have to worry about having that conversation, Gary.
But I know, I just want to flag it, because there was this sort of thing, like, everyone is saying it, but is that actually true, or is that just... Because people who've really followed this government generally don't think this government has done terribly well. And there's always that little bit of, well, the voters couldn't vote for that, and then you go to the voters and they actually don't care at all.
Well, it's I think it's a number of things, actually. It's not just that there's a sense the government hasn't done very well, but it's also a sense, I think, that right now, it's a government that's starting... It's like plaster that has dried badly, and it's starting to flake. It's friable, It's all just, it's coming apart there and there and there. And health isn't working, crime isn't working, and we're running out of GPs, and the beds aren't working, and there's the hospitals aren't clean, and it's just everything, just nothing. And yes, it's in the context of an economy which is doing really, really well. But that's creating its own problems, because the housing regulations and the cost of housing is producing all sorts of unintended consequences. The environmental policies are front-loading and making it really difficult. They're even silly stuff. Right, for example, I don't know, did you see the confirmation of the report on the plan to make the sale of diesel and petrol cars after 2030 illegal?
Yeah.
And that's come out, and the word is back from Europe, you can't do that.
No, that would be a total ban, would be a breach of the market regulations, because European countries make those things.
Now, what you were looking at it from, you going through the constituencies, at the same time as you were having this idea, we hadn't had this conversation, but we kind of independently, where both of us were looking at the numbers. And I was looking at the fact that Fine Gael are on 47 seats. And last time out, they got 25.5% of the vote. And they have consistently been 28, 29, 30% in the polls. And Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, for the last little while, have been nip and tuck together. Now, there's no, it just made no numerical sense to me at all. It couldn't make sense how Fine Gael were going to lose seats and go up 4 points or 3 points. Even if they maintain their vote, even if they go up a point and a half, 2 points, they have to pick up seats.
Hmm.
And Fine Gael aren't going to have this huge runaway. And yet at the same time, both of us had this kind of gut feeling that there was a change in the mood out there, that people were just fed up. And what I've been saying to you, and we both were talking about, we'll agree, is the single most dangerous thing that can happen to a party in government is the perception by the public that they have become in a way detached from understanding the lives of the voters. Now, this is something that Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil, all of them, have been throwing at Leo, etc., for the last couple of years. But it hadn't stuck. But it seems to me in the last 2 or 3 months, partially by accident, but partially by their own incompetence, and by the way they've communicated, Fine Gael have actually started to lean into that. And I wonder now, right now, there's another 3 weeks of this to go. But right now, is Leo an asset or a liability in this election?
I mean, if it was me running Fine Gael's communications, I would want him nowhere near the front. Coveney and Pascal, those are your people.
I would have Coveney and Pascal out front.
Leo is not quite at a sort of Harris level. He's at a kind of Owen Murphy level, a sort of, look, some people do like you, but please God, kind of not every day. And Harris is in some sort of lead-lined bunker, two foot under the Fine Gael HQ.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this has been also, I'm not sure of the dates when this poll was collected, but so what? That's now a 12 percentage point difference between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. But this entire week has just been awful for Fine Gael. Mm-hmm. It has just been story after story, which isn't about the economy, isn't about anything technical. It is a human interest story.
Yes.
It is a human angle. It's homelessness. It is, oh, by the way, Dublin City Council bulldozed a homeless man. And here's a photo of Owen Murphy's election poster just above where it happened. And then you go to Leo and go, what do you think of these things, Leo? And he just, it's not where his strengths lie. And it's been cringy to watch.
When he was brought to that, his immediate instinct was deflect. And he went after the Lord Mayor and he went and
it's someone else's fault.
Someone else.
Which it might be. It's not his fault if the Dublin City Council does something. But at the same time, it's not your opener.
It's not. But you're the first, I would say the first thing you should, a politician, particularly the leader of a party, especially the Taoiseach, the first thing you have to do is be a human being. Be what the Americans would say, be a mensch. So, this terrible thing has happened. Your first reaction should be, oh, it's awful. I just think, it's a terrible, that poor man, listen, we're going to find out how this happened. This should never have happened. And we are working, we have been working hard and we're going to work harder and better to make sure that we can provide houses sustainably, blah, blah, whatever. But the first thing you do is express a human emotion. You don't stand back and go, oh, well, no, it wasn't my fault.
I think Leo's problem is that when he does attempt to express a human emotion, like when he'll do the quick sentence of, yeah, this is terrible, but it just, there's something about him that just makes the human part of it just disappear.
And that he has a problem that Micheál Martin is very good at that.
Hmm. I mean, all I've seen of Micheál Martin since the election started is a photo of Micheál Martin with a young child who's smiling up at him and he's smiling down at the child. And he's saying something like, it's important to listen to the things that children tell you are important to them, their hopes, their concerns, and their dreams. Which is compared to Fine Gael's week of, how many homeless people would you like to kill with bulldozers? And actually, did you see Did you see where they were just after news broke about that?
Yeah.
Oh, they went to, was it a heavy machinery plant?
Yeah, he was in
a... And then he gets into the forklift and says...
He gets into the forklift and says,
it's surprisingly roomy in here.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And just immediately after news broke that a homeless man was nearly killed when his tent was... Oh. Do you think there was someone in HQ going, there where? They've gone where? Okay, I mean, we can contain that. And it just cuts to a feed of Leo in a forklift smiling.
No, it's like,
okay, right, that's what we're doing here. That's it, yeah.
You know, sometimes as well, things just take a life of their own. I don't believe that there is any kind of gross conspiracy in the Irish media. I think it's everything that happens in Irish media happens because of the people that are in it. And they're there because they're the people who went for those jobs, and it's perfectly predictable and it's not coordinated. But moods change. You know, there are moments when things just shift in a direction. And I wonder if this is just a moment when the media has just, for their own reasons, the individuals within it are just having a problem with Leo and are now looking at Micheál. I know some of it may be just pure partisanship, but there was an article in The Examiner, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I had a look at. Because, well, the first, I was initially reading it because it was a report on Micheál Martin in Wexford Town. So I saw Wexford and I was so interested. I was talking about the glowing reception he got in the Labour stronghold. And it goes through the description of everything, and there's lots of people coming, hanging around because the cameras are there, you know? So the end of it is this. I read out a little bit for you. On the street, pensions were the furthest things from people's minds as 16-year-old Omar Karmas charmed passerbys with his saxophone playing. Now, that I'm already sceptical because, frankly, I'm reminded of the old joke. You know, what's the definition of a gentleman? Is a man who can play the accordion but doesn't. I've always felt that actually could apply to the saxophone as much. Anyway, Micheál gave the teen busker a paper note for his work, and the local candidate tried her. The notes were wasted on the too young to vote musician. Who would he vote for Fianna Fáil in 2 years' time? No, I don't know anything about it. Now, here's the last paragraph. And then the cameras stopped rolling, the media left, and the crowds dispersed. But Micheál, with no one watching, walked up to a homeless man, said a few words, and gave him a few coins in his cup too. Now, Gary, if you were writing a press release for Fianna Fáil in Mount Street,
I challenge you,
write a better article for Micheál Martin.
I love the idea of just Micheál Martin with one hand on a homeless man's shoulder, just looking at him with compassion, and then Leo in a forklift smiling.
I feel this bears repeating, because there's a poetry to it. The cameras stopped rolling, the media left, the crowds dispersed, but Micheál, no, not Micheál Martin, but Micheál, comma, with no one watching, walked up to a homeless man, said a few words, and gave him a few coins for his cup too. You couldn't buy it.
No, you couldn't. But the thing about Micheál, actually, the thing that's been so irritating about his sort of policy of, you know, not an absence of policy, but a policy of absence.
Absence, yeah.
Has been that Micheál, when he wants to be, is very good at this.
Oh, he is.
He is very good at this.
In a government, in a front bench, which was with a lot of talented people. I mean, if you go back to the high point of that Fianna Fáil government, you had people, not to everybody's taste, Gary, but you had the likes of Seamus Brennan, one of the most talented politicians the country's seen in the last 50 years. You had Charlie McCreevy. You had Harney. You had Mary Hanafin. You had Micheál Martin. You had Bertie Ahern, of course.
Mm.
You had Micheál MacDool. You had, in his own way, as an opposition, and then also government, O'Donoghue, but the Bull Donoghue down in Kerry. There was heavyweights all over the gaff. And Micheál was still one of the best of them. when he was Minister for Health, he would just frustrate journalists with his capacity to completely deflect and absorb and never... Also, his detail, he had a mastery of detail. And that's why I think potentially, we'll see, but he's also a good debater.
Yes, as I said, there's only one time I've ever seen Michal on any interview or debate not look like he's in control of the situation. And he must have done, by this point, probably thousands.
Oh, yeah. The head-to-head, himself and Leo, that could be really, that could be a real sealer. Because Leo's not a bad debater.
No.
And Leo is not stupid. But Leo has a weakness. That if he feels a little bit cornered or a little bit out of control, he can resort to the cheap cut, the dig.
There is also, I mean, there are times Leo can get, I'm not sure if it's arrogance or what it is, but do you remember when he was standing for leader of Fine Gael?
Yeah.
And he had the parliamentary party locked down. He'd made all the required promises and bribes and threats. And he was okay. He was going to be elected, regardless of what the membership voted.
Yes.
But there was still a competition. And even though he couldn't really lose, he had to take part. So he goes to the first debate against Simon Coveney. And this was the first time I think a lot of people had seen Leo, because this was all televised for some reason, had seen Leo debate, you know, outside of a Dáil setting. And Simon Coveney in the first debate ripped him apart. Now, in the second debate, Leo comes back much stronger, much better able to handle. But he walked into a debate he knew was televised and thought he could just half-ass it because he had it in the bag, and he got destroyed. And if he tries that against Micheál Martin will not have the friendliness of Simon Coveney.
It'll be forensic. It will be an autopsy. Now,
speaking of autopsies, actually, stories that have not been good for Fine Gael this week. The chap who died of a broken neck after being in a hospital, I think it was Waterford, on a trolley.
Limerick.
Was it? Yeah, so he's on the trolley, he falls off the trolley, dies of a broken neck. People assume, you know, he suffered it in the hall. And the hospital then, probably on the assumption this was a defence, says, well, I mean, he might have had that when he came in. Which is to say now, that maybe we just missed it.
There's an example of a problem. You and I have talked about this. Not just, I mean, it's not arcane knowledge. But if you look at polling for years and years in Ireland, like other countries in the Western world, people, when you ask about their concerns, will often talk about healthcare as one of their top two or three or four concerns. But when they come to vote, they very rarely vote on healthcare, because if you ask the second question, what is your personal experience of the healthcare system? They say, oh, actually 90% have a positive experience. Now, it's my belief, and I may be wrong on this, I haven't seen numbers, but simply on the basis of the Limerick case is interesting because of this, that because of certain concrete physical changes, I think that healthcare is now actually becoming a thing that they vote on. Because Limerick is consistently one of the most overcrowded or most overcrowded hospital in the country. Now, they built a whole new wing in Limerick and is massively expanded. However, the general hospitals in Ennis and in Nina at the same time were effectively mothballed. Now, the problem there is Limerick serving that part of the Midlands and Centre West, massively overcrowded. All the people who live there in Limerick, in Clare, in Tip, in Offaly, Southcott, whatever, are looking and saying, well, we have empty wards, we have beds. It's not that there aren't beds available potentially, but they're closed. Why can't we open them? Now, there may be all sorts of reasons, economic reasons, staffing reasons, shortages of whatever, of technical staff, but that isn't being addressed, and people see it on the ground. They see the fact that they can't get into bed, that they're left waiting 20 hours, that they're going in, cancer patients, elderly people, going in, waiting for this thing, and they're seeing places, buildings that are unused. And that's new experiences. the general experience individually of the positive experience with healthcare is in decline. And it's, but the crime issue also. Now, listen, trivial about this or frivolous, because it's horrible. It feels like we've suddenly had this. Every day there's been a murder, and more, and each in its own way horrendous. Like that case of that young man from West Cork, sportsman, athlete, rugby player, 20 years old, up in Cork IT. He answers the door at 9 o'clock in the evening. You see, if you're involved in the drugs business, not obviously what they did to that young man was horrible beyond belief. I think you were saying that some of the when the crime correspondence was saying.
Oh yeah, I think it was Mick O'Toole. He was saying that he'd covered, I think, 600 murders over the course of his career, because crime correspondent with a tabloid.
Yeah,
that's sort of what they do. And he was saying he'd never seen one this bad. Like this and was sort of a cartel level of. We'll kill him, we'll distribute his bodies over 15 kilometers of ground, we'll videotape it to send to one of his family members, it's just, and we'll torture him.
And if you talk to people who are working in drugs treatment and in the Gardaí, in that part of the world, they'll tell you, lads, if you thought the last generation were bad, the new generation, when it comes to their capacity to accelerate to extreme violence in a matter of moments, these people are far, far worse, and they're terrifying.
Actually, I found the poll. That poll was taken during the RIC controversy.
Oh, right.
So it doesn't even include the last week.
Right. Now, the point I'm making is not in any way to diminish the horror of what happened to that young man, but if you're an ordinary voter, the fact is that you can look at people who get involved in certain kinds of violence, and you can think, well, as long as you don't put yourself in the wrong situation, you can be safe. You don't go to the wrong part of town after night. You don't mix with those kinds of people. You don't do that kind of business. You know, you can be safe. But this was a chap who opened his door at 9 o'clock in the evening in Cork City. That's something any of us would do. And he ends up dead. That's horrific. And for Fine Gael, I mean, the party of law and order. And then they made a hames of the politics. You know that the video we were talking about earlier about Fianna Fáil having no policies? It's the Fine Gael video saying Fianna Fáil have no policy.
The Fine Gael video, which, for those of you who hadn't seen it, it was clearly shot in Fine Gael HQ. It had what I hope were interns wearing paper masks of various members of Fianna Fáil, running around, opening things up, looking for policies, like running at your food containers and things like that.
And it had the Benny Hill music.
And I assumed it was sort of it's so bad it'll be shared around the place kind of thing to it, because it was not good.
No.
But then they deleted it.
They've deleted it.
And then it came out that the HQ was divided on whether or not they could delete it, but felt after the pushback that they should delete it, which indicates that the Fine Gael HQ is skittish and divided, which is not what you want from your HQ in communications as you go into an election where Fianna Fáil are going to be trying to fuck you.
So, but they make this really silly thing. The point they're trying to make is Fianna Fáil have no policies. Fianna Fáil are looking and saying, well, at what stage do you think we should launch our policies, lads? So we launch them all the time. But in response, they roll out a policy on the extension of the role of the Special Criminal Court. And the silence in response from Fine Gael is almost funny. Because Fianna Fáil put out this policy, which is the kind of policy that Fine Gael will have a real problem opposing, and I think will be a popular one generally. And they're going, oh, all right, you have a policy, and it's on crime, and it's addressing gangland. Oh, right, yeah, right, okay.
Yeah, Fine Gael put up a thing, I'm not sure if it was Twitter or Instagram, And it said 72 hours into the election and Fianna Fáil haven't released a single new policy. And you sort of go, maybe they released them in the 9 years you were in government up to this point.
Well, indeed. I mean,
and then you pick a slogan. Even their slogan is terrible. A future we can look forward to. Have you seen the, someone took the Fine Gael leaflet and put that slogan prominently. And it's just a list of things, one of which is, you can look forward to dying in a bed, or sorry, in a trolley. You can look forward to never being able to retire. And she's like, I wonder if Fine Gael HQ saw this one coming. Probably not. I mean, it could only be better if it had something like, I think I saw someone and they had extended it. So it said a future you can look forward to. Don't look back in anger to the past, please.
So if we just very quickly have a look at the poll. Now, the first thing to observe, it's a Sunday Times poll. So it's a behaviour and attitudes poll.
Yeah, B&A.
Which is not everybody's favourite. Margin of error is 3.3%. Fianna Fáil are 32, which is up 5. Fine Gael down 7 to 20. So they were tight, neck and neck in 27. Sinn Féin up, are down 1. Greens up 1. Labour down 2 to 4. Independent Alliance up 1. Solidarity, People for Profit 2, down 1. Social Democrats on 1. And Renew on 1, up 1. Others 10. So, it's early days. But you're saying this was taken during the RIC controversy.
Mm.
So this was before...
Before the photos happened. Of a woman eating soup on a ledge of a building in Dublin.
Genuinely heartbreaking. This elderly woman having her supper on a ledge. And, you know, this kind of stuff. And there's a 12-point gap. So today, Sunday the 19th, so it's 11, 12... 19 days. It's two and a half weeks. You have 2.5 weeks to turn that around.
And it's not going well. It's not trending the way you want it to go.
It's not trending. And there is I don't know how much of a danger, but there is a possibility that if Fianna Fáil get enough wind up, that if they can get up towards 34, 35, then they're going to be in a position to potentially form a government with just one or two parties, which in the context of the last number of years would look like stability.
I mean, and then, I mean, you just have, it's just been a terrible, it's like they've forgotten how to run a fucking election.
Yeah.
Like, Regina Doherty has, since the election was called, or sorry, maybe, yeah, let's say yeah, the last yeah, 2 weeks, yeah, just yeah, to be yeah. sure we catch both of these, has had two fact checks where people have said, in one case, I saw what I believe is one of the presidents of one of the doctors' unions,
yeah, the
where
GPs,
she said
it?
That we have 1,000 more GPs working today than we did 5 years ago. And they put out a response that said, that is a complete and utter lie. You must retract it. Now, they didn't say you were mistaken. And for those who think that's not important, if you say someone is you know, it's a mistruth or it's a mistake, you're not saying they lied, because to say that someone has lied is to say that they knew what they were saying was incorrect and said it anyway in order to get you to believe it. And
the intent was to deceive.
Yeah, that is an incredibly important distinction on these kind of things, because you're saying, no, you weren't mistaken. You bloody well knew what you were doing. And for someone like that to call a minister a liar is not normal.
No, it's
they
not.
Would never. They would say they misspoke. They were perhaps misinformed. We hope they'll be more informed in future. That sort of thing, and even that would be kind of pushing it. But come out and just say no, that's bullshit. And then we did a fact check on this. She claimed in a leaflet that she had put in place. She had ensured that workers would keep their tips, workers in restaurants. Remember, there was a big hoobala about this.
Yes.
Yeah, fancy restaurants effectively keeping tips. I did a fact check of that for Gripped. The Journal later did a fact check of it, which got much more press than we did. I'm not in any way bitter.
No.
But when we reached out to her and asked, well, what's going on with this leaflet? Because you've sent it around. Not only have you not done this, but you voted against a bill from Senator Paul Gavin of Sinn Féin, which sought to do this. And the response we got was, it was a typo. It should have said, we are working, instead of, we have insured.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sort of go, each one of those leaflets is auto-signed by Regina Doherty. Now, that's almost certainly done by a machine. Yeah. But you printed a ton of leaflets that basically made your candidate look like a liar and could be found with seconds of checking. And you went ahead with giving that out publicly.
And to say that it's a typo is what the Americans would call weak sauce.
No, very, I mean, it's, look, sauce, it's entirely possible that they ordered them. They got them on the day of the campaign or the day before and went, ah, bollocks. We did, like, we don't have time to order more of them. Get them out and we'll fix it in the next go.
Yeah. It's not a big deal.
No, but it just, it makes you look like you're untrustworthy.
Okay,
and they keep doing stuff like this. They don't show any signs of stopping. It is like they've forgotten how to run an election.
We are where a lot of bad stuff, in fact, I would say worse stuff since the RIC issue has happened. So I have no reason to believe that things have improved since this poll was taken.
No, I mean, it could just be an outlier. There could be an issue with the poll.
I'm suspicious of outliers. I always, the reaction of whatever they are, if it's not about the number, it's at least it's the trend.
Mm.
If the specific numbers may be questionable, but the trend is indicative.
I mean, if this poll is accurate, Fine Gael is currently within 1% of Sinn Féin,
and that is hard to believe.
I wouldn't think that was right. Now, I mean, if it is correct, I mean, that's a sort of take Leo behind the head, the shed, shoot him in the back, and bring Coveney in.
Oh yeah, it's not even the shed. That's the steps of Leinster House.
Maybe that's make it public.
Yeah. So, before we finish, the question, I suppose, now, Fianna Fáil in the next 2.5 weeks will have their bad days. They will make mistakes. We have to assume that. That's going to happen. There will be some, if you're Fine Gael.
Then again, there is another thing we haven't mentioned, Michael, on the scandals front, the Sinn Féin issue. Yeah. Sinn Féin have the, is it Paddy Hooleran?
Oh, who's been suspended.
Yeah, he made comments about Leo and how Leo basically made comments about Leo's heritage, that his family were originally Indian and therefore he didn't have the connection to Ireland that Paddy could have. And also,
he wasn't a family man.
He wasn't a family man, which I think is more defensible than the racial comment. I mean, people have been talking about the weird thing of European leaders having no children. But then again, it could also be a dog whistle to the sort of Leo's homosexuality.
Well, yeah, I think...
I think honestly, I am an incredibly charitable man, Michael.
I don't think it was a dog whistle. I think it was a dog shout.
Ah, yes, the old klaxon. They reprimanded him for that. He apologised, and then the comments came out about underage girls and rape and luring men so they could blackmail them, and that kind of... So we have Sinn Féin with that, we have People Before Profit with one of their candidates coming out and saying that he's either a drug dealer or some charitable drug distributor... Fine Gael
party organizer.
Fine Gael minister is apparently just lining up to commit ritual suicide, and Micheál Martin just smiling at children. So I mean, on that basis, it could be a really good time for Fianna Fáil, and probably Labour if that continues. Actually,
no, I am surprised. I have to say, I'm surprised Labour are down 2 in this. Now the whole poll surprises me. I mean, I'm surprised. By the not that Fine Gael are down or Fianna Fáil are up, but the size of the gap. Labour are down 2-4. Now, on a 4%er, they're going to start running into trouble.
Yeah, they want to get back to at least 6 as quickly as possible.
Brendan Howland, I don't understand what Brendan has been at, my county man, because I regard him as one of the most competent politicians in the country and has been for a long time. He's shown a lack of energy in... For, I don't know, it's strange. Social Democrats have not come along and been this huge gang-busting success that's stolen the Labour Party's clothes or anything. Maybe Labour just is a bit lost in its sense of identity.
No, but it may be possible that Social Democrats, even though they're polling here at 1, are just drawing off that, you know, that 1.5% or something that would bring Labour back to 6. But they're losing it to someone, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're losing it to Fianna Fáil.
That seems to be the most likely place it's going at the moment. I mean, they're unlikely to be losing it to... I don't think they're losing it to Sinn Féin anyway. Possibly the Greens?
There would be overlap there amongst there's the sort of more upward... more upwards upper, kind of chaps.
The upper mobile, the South Dublin Labourites, Wicklow Labourites, those people, that kind of people. But, so, okay, here's the question. What do Fine Gael do? I'm giving you 50 grand here with the 50 well,
here's
grand
the,
bonus.
Here's the thing. You'd want to push forward Simon Coveney. You'd want to push forward Pascal. There are probably going to be issues there with Leo. Because... If you're polling like crap, then you push forward Simon Coveney, the man you beat for leadership, even though the membership overwhelmingly voted for him, mm-hmm. and that turns your poll numbers around, that's still a big problem personally for you. Because, yeah, you might win, but then how long are you going to be leader for?
Not for very long.
No, and that's the end of the road for you. And it's the thing in marketing, it's always better to be selling a product that's actually good. Because the product is good. There's just a lot more you can do with it. And there's a lot more you can say with it. And you have the underlying fact that the product is actually decent. As someone who is very much on the sort of... Well, Fine Gael would have been the closest political party to me pretty much all my life up to the last kind of 10 years. And I haven't really changed. They've very much changed. I don't get what their point is, not of Fine Gael, but of Leo and his administration.
Mm-hmm.
And a sort of look to the future of this administration, I'm not sure what that is. It might not be bad, it just seems like a sort of grey, pointless thing. It doesn't even have the necessary components to be bad. It's just something.
I'm just trying to think, okay, you're saying who we put out there.
You could try and put forward a couple of other people, but a lot of them, it's not that scandals have ruined them, it's that they're either unsuited for what now appears to be the tone of the election, or they are deeply unpopular with some particular segment. And if you're polling on 20%, you don't want to start pissing off particular segments.
Who's out there? I mean, I'm trying to think who... Who would I... Okay, I would certainly agree with you. I'd push out...
I mean, you can't put a show... Coveney. Yeah, you can push out Coveney. You can push out Doherty. She's been accused of lying twice in the last 2 weeks, and...
I'd put out Coveney. I'd put out him. I would push out, say, McHugh.
Joe, yeah, he's not...
I think Joe, he's likable, decent kind of thing. Richard Bruton, maybe?
I think my worry there would be it's very easy to attack him as being against the purr with some of the stuff he's put out in the environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you don't want Fine Gael being able to stand up and say that your plan for cars will mean the purr can't drive. Why do you hate the purr?
I tell you, rather, if I was looking for female face, why not? I'd go for Heather Humphreys. I mean, she's solid, you know? She's
Heather
not
Humphreys
flashy.
Is an interesting one because... So, we haven't seen a lot of her, but I don't think that's as such an issue with her. I think that's just the nature of the brief and the people who are kind of put in around her, the way of it. But yeah, most of what I've seen her do, she's done competently, and you wouldn't be worried she's just going to say something stupid.
And she is all those things I think that they should try. She's not flashy. She is very much of a place. She's from the Northeast. She's Cavan Monaghan. that rural Protestant farming background, you know. It's solid, reliable, dependable, honest. Those kinds of, that kind of sense that again, Joe McHugh kind of have that sense. Ordinariness, that's what I will be trying to get across with this. Let's be as ordinary. Let's communicate a sense that we genuinely understand that there is a problem out there. We are doing our level best within difficult circumstances. At this stage, now, as I say, some people will say, okay, this poll has to be taken with a large grain of salt. And all polls should be taken with some. But I think that if you're in Mount Street tonight and you're Fine Gael and you just decide, okay, we're not taking this seriously, well, then it's just head in the sand job. Whatever's going, and particularly if you were to think that if this poll had carried on another 4 or 5 days, then it could have even been worse.
I think it could have. And I mean, at the end of the day, as I said, I'm just, when you're thinking about things you can do in this and communication strategies and what, you know, how you could mess around. Yeah, there are strategies and things that would probably do it. But there is, under everything, a sort of general malaise of, like, what are we doing this for?
Yeah.
Like, what is the point of this? Like, I think if Leo might be devastated, but there are going to, even a number of ministers who, if this government falls and they end up in opposition, are going to feel nothing but a sort of faint sense of probably overdue.
A sense of relief and release.
Yeah, it's finally over. And that is not, when you're going into election and those are your people, I don't think you should be terribly surprised if you do poorly or you find it difficult to turn the ship around. I mean, there are things they could do. I just, frankly, HQ for Fine Gael also appears to be a concern here. The people in Fine Gael I've talked to, but across councillor and TD level and in just the general sort of backroom sort of grouping, they're all deeply unhappy with HQ. There are certain things that they say HQ has done better this election than the last time around, mostly administration things and things related to postering. But in relation to policy, strategy, communication.
Yeah, but I think it's easy to blame HQ. Every party, either whether it's in the Dáil or whether it's on the ground, if things aren't working, HQ is the easiest place
Michael,
to go.
HQ also recorded that video in HQ. And
absolutely,
pulled.
Stuff like that makes
me kind of think, okay, this may not be the usual just kind of whining. This may, but you can see it in other things. You can see it in the RIC thing. You can see it in some of the policies they put out. Some of the issues they have where they seem legitimately surprised that the incredible foreseeable backlash happened.
You have to have history. You have to have somebody in. You can't just have bright young faces doing these kinds of things.
I mean, look, let's take the RIC thing. And when we were talking about it, we were saying the real issue here is not that they did it. The issue is that they were surprised that it went badly. Because you do lots of stuff that you know is going to go badly, but you sort of go, okay, it'll, in the long run, it'll work out or it'll make us look good to a particular section. But you don't get surprised by the bad things because you should know they're coming. And for them to legitimately be surprised that anyone, or even many people, would say RIC commemoration, the Black and Tans were part of the RIC, as were the auxiliaries, and therefore you're commemorating the Black and Tans, and that this should be like a mind-blowing surprise for you, is incredibly worrying, because it speaks of either a HQ or the people making that decision who are totally out of touch with even their own people. I mean, if you went to a rural Fine Gael TD and went, do you think this is a good idea? Do you think, I don't think there are many Fine Gael TDs who go, you know what, lads, that's great. That's a real vote winner for us.
If you're a Fine Gaeler from my family, on my mother's side, right? Where your grandfather was a founder member of the Gardaí Síochána and had been a member of the IRB and the IRA, and his wife was a member of the Citizens Army, and whose grandfather had been in the Fenians. And you had spent the period from 1916 to 1922 either on the run or in jail. And that's your granda, and that's my family. And they're Fine Gaelers, right? And people forget that. People assume that Fine Gael is all Irish Parliamentary Party and Unionists. But there's a big chunk of Fine Gael which comes from the GPO. And they are in places like Wexford and Kilkenny and West Cork and Donegal. And they're looking at something like this and going, are you fucking serious? Are you kidding me? Now, they will say, okay, listen, we can have a talk about this and recognize. But what they criticized everybody else was a lack of nuance. When the problem with the proposal was a lack of nuance, that it was an undifferentiated commemoration of what was, shall we say, at the very least, a problematic institution. But as you say, the problem was that they seemed to be amazed and surprised and a bit hurt when people came back. And when they were getting word back from county councillors and branch members around the country saying, are yous gone mad? Can you imagine being an old-fashioned Fine Gaeler and the kind of slagging that you've had to put up with from Fianna Fáilers after Mass on Sunday, after the RIC thing? I mean, the slaggings that they would have been horrendous.
But I mean, here's the other thing. Simon Coveney is from Cork.
Yeah.
And he is the deputy leader of the party. So...
just, where they tried to burn the place.
Yeah, like they burned
and
the city down.
As well, you know.
And you just sort of go, like, does that... like, did they talk to... Yeah. Who okayed this?
Right, yeah,
and then they went, oh, well, the academic committee recommended it, so we had to do it. Which is sort of like someone coming up to you in a school and saying, we had to do that because one of the bigger boys told me to accept that person is, in fact, the principal.
Yeah.
And you sort of go, you're the government, lads. An academic committee doesn't tell you what to do. It recommends things, and if you don't like them, you ignore them, or you send them to another committee.
In truth, Ferreter hung them out to dry.
Beautifully done. Beautifully done.
No. Ferreter was not having any. And Ferreter, whatever else Dermot is a consummate media performer. He knows exactly how to handle these things. And, oh, he handled them. He sank them below the waterline. It was a lovely job. Anyway, I suppose, Gary, it's time to just sit back and say, well, let's see what the next week brings.
I think we shall. One of the Fine Gaelers sent me a text when I was chatting to him before the poll came out. And he forwarded me on the poll. And then his just next message was, I'm just going to sleep. And I think there's something to be said there. More for us, because we record these very late.
Yes.
Than for the listener. Although, if you want to go to sleep at 2 p.m. on a Sunday, well, by God, that is your right. Or at least something you can probably do. Unless you're in heavy machinery picking the homeless off the streets, in which case we've already seen where that goes.
Anyway, well, we wish all those who are out there canvassing and working hard the best, and congratulate all those who are engaged in this wonderful process called democracy. And we shall wait with bated breath, and we will be back very soon to talk a little bit more about this. And although I think possibly the next time we're talking, we may be actually having a chat about the recent demise of the much admired and much beloved conservative philosopher Roger Scruton.
Yes, indeed.
So we'll be talking about that. Okay, but have a good Sunday, and goodbye.
All the best.